Ancient technologies. So what exactly was civilization like before 10,000 BC? I've been very fortunate to have travelled to many parts of the world in order to gain clues to these questions. I've paid frequent visits to Mexico and Asia on numerous occasions. I've also visited Egypt, Peru and other South American countries. And I've done all this in order to learn about and understand better the great global civilization that existed prior to the cataclysms of 10,000 BC. During each one of these travels, I have been searching for the remains of this enigmatic civilization. All I can say is there is so much evidence that such a civilization really existed and possessed very high technology, perhaps slightly more advanced than the technology we possess today. I realize that this is a very big statement to make, but I have my reasons for making it, as you will discover. It is one thing to read about the traces of this civilization in books. However, if you visit these ancient sites in person and examine the evidence in detail, you will have no doubt whatsoever that this civilization was very advanced indeed. All ancient structures around the world exhibit a very advanced technology. The most ancient of buildings around the world are made of huge, hulking blocks of stone. The remains of more recent structures always show less advanced building techniques. It would seem that after the deluge of 10,000 BC, civilization regressed and technology was lost, and sophisticated building techniques could no longer be utilized. For instance, in Mexico, about 20 miles outside Mexico City, there is an incredibly ancient city called Teotihuacan. Now, Teotihuacan literally means the place where men became gods. Now, once again, the Aztecs at the time of Moctezuma were asked by Cortes, who built Teotihuacan? Did you? Now, the Aztecs used Teotihuacan, this incredible and very advanced space age-like city, but Moctezuma laughed and told Cortes, oh no, we couldn't possibly have built such an incredible city. He explained that it had actually been built way back at the very dawn of time by gods. At Teotihuacan, we have the Pyramid of the Sun and the Pyramid of the Moon, and many other temples scattered around. It is a vast complex and stretches for miles, and to this day it has not fully been excavated, and the city may actually extend much further than we are currently aware. Now, no matter how many times you visit Teotihuacan, it is truly breathtaking. This huge pyramid, this gigantic pyramid, the Pyramid of the Sun, towers above you. It is placed off to one side of what is known as the Avenue, or the Way of the Dead. And at the end of this avenue, we have a smaller pyramid that is built on higher ground, and this is known as the Pyramid of the Moon. Even though the Pyramid of the Moon is smaller than the Pyramid of the Sun, their apexes are at exactly the same height, as the Pyramid of the Moon is on raised ground. If we were to duplicate the construction of Teotihuacan, we would be very hard-pressed to do so. In fact, I believe that with our modern technology, it would be impossible to do so. Another very interesting feature of these pyramids is that the proportion pi has been used in their design and construction. This, of course, immediately signifies that the builders of Teotihuacan possessed advanced mathematics. Also, a sheet of mica around 90 foot square was found in one of the structures at Teotihuacan. Now, mica is a crystalline material that is used today in electronic circuits and instrumentation. Mica has very unusual qualities in that when you bend a sheet of mica, a voltage is created across it and a current can flow. Not only that, mica can also convert electrical impulses into physical vibration. In other words, it actually moves in response to electrical impulses, and today it is also used in certain types of loudspeakers, known as piezoelectric tweeters. Now, a sheet of mica 90 foot square is a very large piece indeed. And first of all, to find and mine such a large piece of mica, yet alone move it, is a wondrous feat of engineering. Especially when we consider that the nearest source of mica is actually thousands of miles from Mexico and very far south in Brazil. So we must ask, what would motivate a group of people to transport such a large piece of mica over thousands of miles? This is beyond most people's comprehension when we consider that to do the same today would be extremely difficult, if not impossible. It begs lots of questions. Now, as I explained earlier, the Aztecs said that this technologically advanced city was built by the gods. All over the planet, wherever we find monoliths or very advanced structures, we hear this same story of gods. There are always stories of gods having built these structures, or people with advanced science and technology who appeared godlike. We also find that the city of Teotihuacan, like all ancient cities and temples, was aligned or laid out in accordance with certain astronomical principles. The actual location and planning of the city of Teotihuacan indicates that it was once aligned with the previous position of the North Pole, and this was when the North Pole was previously located at Hudson Bay. As we learned earlier, the North Pole was previously located at Hudson Bay until around 10,000 BC. Therefore, it would appear that Teotihuacan was actually built over 11,000 years ago. My research eventually led me much further south to Peru, where I visited a remarkable place called Sacsayhuaman, which is located above the modern-day city of Cusco. I had first heard of this structure back in the mid-1970s through the books of Eric von Daniken. At Sacsayhuaman, we find huge walls made of massive monolithic pieces of rock, perfectly cut, perfectly joined. You couldn't even shine a laser beam between the joins. When I saw these joins myself, it seemed as though these gigantic rocks had been melted like butter and placed together. Some of these monoliths are actually hundreds of tons in weight. There is one particular block at Sacsayhuaman that I honestly believe would be impossible to move today, as it is hundreds of tons in weight. Also, some miles from Sacsayhuaman, we also find another interesting structure at a site called Ollantaytambo. Once again, here we find massive monoliths placed on the top of a mountain, and once again, these are hundreds of tons in weight. Once again, we find that these have been cut perfectly and sandwiched together with great precision. There is even evidence of power tools having been used to cut some of these blocks. Even if we only see pictures of these, it is obvious that these were not cut by hand. Yet, here they are on top of a mountain. There is even evidence to this day of where these monoliths were actually quarried. And amazingly, these enormous pieces of rock were quarried over 12 miles away and over two mountain ranges. So we have to ask, how did the builders move these monoliths? Today we cannot even move such rocks with modern cranes. It is especially mystifying when you consider the distances over which they moved them and the terrain over which they were carried. Another fascinating ancient city called Tiwanaku is situated on the shoreline of Lake Titicaca in Bolivia. Or rather more accurately, it used to be located on the shore many thousands of years ago, but is now located 12 miles away. It would appear that sometime in antiquity, a great cataclysm thrust the land upward so that the ancient city of Tiwanaku is today much higher than the lake. Alternatively, the water level of the lake itself must have dropped by hundreds of feet, which is very unusual and highly unlikely. The ancient city of Tiwanaku was originally a port city, and if we visit Tiwanaku today, we can still see evidence of the ancient pier. And once again, this ancient pier was constructed of huge, hulking blocks of stone, each one weighing hundreds of tons in weight. But these massive pieces of rock today are found scattered all over the place as if they were thrown about like matchsticks. Now, the only way to toss about such large pieces of rock is through massive seismic or earthquake activity. At this ancient city of Tiwanaku, there is a temple enclosure known as the Kalasasaya. And like most ancient temples and structures around the world, it is perfectly aligned to stellar objects. In other words, the sun or the planets of the solar system. At certain times of the year, the sun should rise and set at very specific points of the temple. Now, if we turn our clocks back, the only time at which the rising and setting of the sun was correctly aligned to these points was around 15,000 BC, indicating that it was probably built over 17,000 years ago. This is a very long time ago by anyone's reckoning, and it could mean all the history books are incorrect in their dating of their emergence of civilization. Once again, Orthodox archaeology tells us that civilization actually emerged around 4000 BC and only in the Near East. So here we have another enigma. Also, if we look at some of the frescoes that are still in existence at this temple and examine them rather closely, there are depictions of species of animal that have been extinct since around 10,000 BC. So obviously, Tiwanaku is a very ancient city, and there are many ways we can prove this. Now, one place that I have not visited, and someday I hope to, is Baalbek in the Lebanon. Here we find monoliths, pieces of rock that have been cut perfectly and shaped beautifully, that are up to 1,000 tons and more in weight. Not only that, some of these rocks are placed high overhead in walls. These are believed to be the world's biggest blocks of cut stone. Some of these blocks of stone are as tall as 5-story buildings and weigh between 600 and 1,200 tons in weight. There is even a megalith at this site that is over 80 feet in length, and this megalith weighs over 1,200 tons. Now, at this point, I really should explain that the largest cranes we have in the world today can only lift between 200 and 300 tons in weight. And to set up one of these cranes to make this lift also is no easy task, since it takes between a week and 10 days to do so. So clearly, we do not have the technology to replicate this feat today. Point blank, we cannot do this today. We have no hope of constructing such buildings today. We simply do not have the technology capable of doing so. So there must have been a much greater technology in existence on this planet prior to 10,000 BC than there is today. However, it seems that this technology was lost by the cataclysm and deluge that occurred at that time. I would now like to talk a little about the Sphinx in Egypt. If we go to Egypt and visit the Sphinx on the Giza Plateau, we will notice that the Sphinx is surrounded by an enclosure. And if we look around this enclosure and on the Sphinx's body itself, we will see lots of gullies and fissures in the rock. Wind and sand erosion produce completely different weathering patterns, so these fissures and gullies could not have been created by wind or sand. The only type of weathering that can produce such fissures and gullies is water, and that's lots and lots of water. Therefore, obviously, vast quantities of water must have flowed over the Sphinx and the Sphinx's enclosure in antiquity, gradually wearing the rock away over 1,000 or so years. Also, sea incrustations have been found on the back of the Sphinx, indicating that the Sphinx was actually under the sea at some time. So when was it under the sea? Experts, in other words, Egyptologists, archaeologists, geologists and anthropologists, tell us that Egypt has been very dry since around 9000 BC. So obviously this weathering on the Sphinx and the Sphinx enclosure must have been due to the deluge of 10,000 BC, and it went on for up to 1,000 years or so until the dry period commenced. It takes a very long time to wear away rocks to develop such fissures and gullies. Now there are many, many other enigmas in Egypt. In fact, Egypt is full of enigmas. For instance, diorite is a very hard rock that is very difficult to cut and to work with. Even with today's modern power tools, it is not easy to work diorite. However, in the Museum of Egyptology in Cairo, we find a number of these incredible vases made of diorite. These vases have extremely thin, flanged, tapering necks. Now, as I said a moment ago, diorite is an extremely difficult rock to work with. To make extremely intricate bends and twists and curves in such a hard rock is rather difficult to do even today. And when we look inside these vases and jars, we clearly see a spiral pattern. And it is obvious from this spiral pattern that they have actually been hollowed out using some kind of a power tool. Now, incidentally, the feed rate of a material is the speed at which a drill can advance into that material. Now, obviously, the harder the material, the lower the feed rate. Machinists and other experts tell us that the feed rate at which these artifacts have been hollowed out is almost impossible to achieve today. We simply do not possess drills that are powerful enough to attain such a high feed rate. The only type of drill that could possibly approach the feed rate we find in these diorite jars are ultrasonic drills. We are told that the ancient Egyptians only had copper tools. Now, copper is a very soft metal, and it can easily be bent with our hands or fingers. So this does not add up at all. It is simply impossible for copper tools to wear away any rock remotely approaching the hardness of diorite. So there are many artifacts that show evidence that a very high technology was in use in ancient Egypt. We see this evidence in the accuracy with which blocks of stone have been cut and joined, and the precision of curves cut into items made from very hard rock. These all show the use of the ancient equivalent of our modern laser-guided technology and ultrasonic drilling. Even today, we are very hard-pressed in cutting to such close tolerances, as we see evident in many ancient Egyptian artifacts. A wonderful book entitled The Giza Power Plant by Christopher Dunn, who is a machinist and master craftsman, examines in great detail the overwhelming evidence that the ancient Egyptians had access to and used advanced machining technology. This is an extremely important book, and I strongly urge the listener to read it. The author proves in a highly scientific manner that the only way the ancient Egyptians could possibly have constructed many of the artifacts that have been found was through the use of high technology and advanced power tools. Christopher Dunn also examines the Great Pyramid and various unique phenomena and anomalies that have been observed in this incredible structure. Astounding though it may seem, his conclusions, based purely on scientific principles, are that the Great Pyramid was constructed and used as a power plant. I honestly believe that this is the best book on the subject and is the most satisfactory explanation I have ever come across in the 28 years that I have been researching this subject.